All right, welcome everyone. We're into my show now. It's midnight on Friday over there in Europe, Scotland, Ireland, UK, and elsewhere. It's still in the PM over here in America. It's in the AM in Australia. So I still have Jill and I still have Suzanne with me. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you for having me again.
Welcome, Jill.
Thank you, Stephen, for having me. And I'm so delighted to be here with the magnificent Suzanne and you, the wonderful Stephen.
Yes. You know what I thought about? You two thought about doing a show with Thomas Sheridan. He's been on the network many times with other shows and other hosts and that. But I thought we might dabble into psychology with the psychopathic narcissism, Jill and Suzanne, since you two are so learned.
Oh, yeah, we're so keen on psychopathic
So
narcissism,
keen,
aren't we,
yes.
Suzanne?
It fascinates me. It
Yeah.
really does fascinate me.
Well, it's beginning to me also, so I don't know. I thought we would talk about it. I thought we'd talk about first your guest you had on last week, Jill, Sam. What's his last name again?
Vaknin.
Vaknin, yes. What are your thoughts on Sam?
Well, Sam wouldn't like my thoughts on Sam, and he'd love my thoughts on Sam, because I think that the whole idea about narcissism is screwed up. I don't think people understand narcissism yet. I think Sam thinks he's incurable, and I say, Sam, that's a cop out, and you're suffering from avoidant attachment, which means that in his phases of attachment, he wanted, his mother was an extremely cruel woman. And he remembers developing his false self, and he's hanging on to his false self, and
Well,
he doesn't need to.
explain the psychological term of narcissism, or maybe even psychopathic narcissism, as you know it.
Well, Suzanne, you explain it. Go on, get me off the hook here.
I'm just learning about this, and I don't know if I'm qualified to give an exact definition of it.
No.
There are nine traits. There was a documentary that I was watching the other night about one gentleman who displayed all nine traits, and he was 18 years old, which was unheard of because at the time the psychiatrist that was in the documentary was explaining that they were not quick to put all nine onto a child, someone under the age of 18, because they're still developing. And this young man convinced this girl that he was in love with that he was a famous tennis star because he met her while he was playing tennis on a tennis court. Convinced her that he had all these sponsors, convinced her that he was going to take her out and on holiday to America. He was in the UK. And stole his father's credit card to purchase tickets online. And when his father confronted him, bludgeoned his father and his mother to death and left them in the house
What?
while he went on holiday. And it was about 6 weeks before the parents were discovered. And it was an incredible case, as the psychologist on the case was talking, and she was the liaison to the media, because before that, narcissistic personality disorder was not used in a court case, either prosecution or defense. So, and he was 18, like I mentioned, it was very interesting to the media at the time. And so watching this media coverage many years after the fact, and being able to look at it from that perspective, was very shocking to me that unless there's a trigger, it seems, which could be anything, whatever trigger that the narcissist or the psychopath has, that you would not be aware of, maybe even by your sheer existence, they are threatened by you and you become the target of them. And, without empathy, without that part of their brain connected with the neural receptors working properly, they're able to do horrible, egregious things without any feeling whatsoever. And that is absolutely terrifying to me on multiple levels, not just to the point where it becomes murderous, but what the psychological damage that we do to each other simply by interacting, and how we seek revenge, and what we do in order to get someone back for the wrong that they think that we've done to them.
I was just about ready to search up the psychopathic narcissism when I got a message from someone else I was going to respond to. But Jill, do you know any of the traits that are attributed to this disorder?
Affliction or traits? No, Suzanne knows the traits. Look, basically, the aspect of narcissism that I look at is because I just think the way we label people is really hilarious. I mean, like, narcissism's only been recognized for the last 35 years, even though Narcissus, the story of Narcissus has been there all along.
1977, right? I think.
Was it 77? I thought it was 80, but yeah, around about then.
Oh, 35 years. Okay.
And I think, you know, there's three types of, they say that it comes from attachment disorders. This is what I've learned from the psychiatrist, Stuart Twemlow, and from what I've read, and also from Sam Vaknin. And basically, I should send Sam a message saying we're talking about you on air now. He'd love that. I'm actually on Sam Vaknin's page right now. He's just written a book. He writes endless books. So it's not getting me anywhere. But the whole point is that we're talking about attachment disorders and people who are hidden from themselves, like people who have to put up this false self to cope with everything. And then this sort of, it's interesting because you look at it in terms of the ego and the superego and all the different aspects of the psyche, and you wonder about this false self, because the thing is, this false self is false. So it's sort of like you're in this state of constant panic and not being authentic. It's about what we were talking about before. So there's three types of attachment disorders, right? So in other words, when you're young and your needs aren't met because people haven't connected with you, which is what we were sort of really talking about, the importance of connecting with our children and the aim of that show, even though it was bit hard to sort of lead. Yes, Stephen?
I just searched up psychopathic narcissist and Sam, samvac.tripod is the second link. I guess maybe it's Sam. Yeah, it is Sam's site or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Sam Vaknin, Vaknin, has written heaps and heaps. And he talks about the narcissist mask. But I can't remember your question now. What's the main drift of this? I'll just finish
some of
with
the traits.
Yeah. Well, basically, they either have what you call avoidant attachment, which means they're avoiding you and that they avoid relationship. They have that it's a way of coping, though. It is a false self. They're not comfortable enough to just connect, so they present a false self instead. Or they have anxious attachment and they're sort of more or clinging on to you. So you can think about this in terms of narcissistic behavior.
Antisocial personality disorder. That's one of the traits, I think. Huh. I just looked up and I seen the wiki.
But see, we're demonizing them, and they were our children once. We can't. This it's really tricky. I think we have to demonize or you know, sort of get angry with the behavior, but we don't have to be angry with the essential person, because that just makes them build more and more this sort of false self. I mean, well, not that you can really. Yeah, go on.
You know what really makes me wonder. Some of these things, as far as narcissism or some of these traits that we'll be discussing or whatever, I wonder if it's anything like the fake psychological disorders that they invent for children to push these drugs upon. Look at some of the examples I can bring up, or like
we drug them rather than get closer to them
ODD.
And help them find themselves.
Yeah.
We drug them and disassociate, help them disassociate more and more and more.
Yeah, what do you think, Suzanne?
I absolutely agree. And my daughter is 3 years old and she throws tantrums. She does not have a bipolar schizophrenic disorder.
Or
my son questions my authority at least 20 times a day. It does not mean that he has oppositional defiance disorder.
That's right.
These are the pains of growing up. They are...
Yep.
They are learning about what our rules are.
Yeah, I've.
Each household has different rules. When you go over to someone else's house and have dinner and you're a kid, you learn what their rules are. When you go and spend the night at your friend's house, you learn what their rules are. When you go to school, you learn what their rules are. There's less and less consistency and security as you grow up. So children are constantly dealing with having everything secure. And then all of a sudden, it's slowly being ripped out from underneath their feet as soon as they learn to walk and talk.
Well,
so this is the growing pain. This is not a problem. The problem is parents don't know how to or want to parent, and natural behaviors have now been demonized as psychiatric disorders, and teachers and people who are, and in my opinion, no one is qualified because there's no blood test, there's no MRI, there's no scientific method used to say, yes, this person has a personality disorder, because there's nowhere that they can find in the brain that shows that there is a disorder at all.
Yeah.
So
I wonder if, go ahead.
Actually, that's not true.
I wonder if there's any kind of a disorder that bad people or narcissists take advantage of good people. I wonder if there's something in one of them books.
Stephen, can I just take it back one?
Yes, let's.
We're talking about narcissists taking advantage of good people, and that's an important thing to say. But there is there are parts of the brain that do show up on fMRIs that are less active in a psychopath, which is an extension of narcissism. But you know, it's the old story: which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Because if that part of the brain isn't being used, then it won't show up so much. So I actually don't think, I think, as you and I have discussed before, Suzanne, with neuroplasticity, the brain can stimulate, you know, thoughts can stimulate this part of the brain. So if we teach children empathy and to empathize, then I've forgotten the name. It's the insular something or other in the brain, I think. I've forgotten the name of it. I should learn it. But basically, if you can practice empathy, then you can actually grow that aspect of the brain, which doesn't show up on the fMRI now, but it will show up and grow if you stimulate it with empathic thoughts, because that's the part of the brain that is needed to stimulate it. So basically what I'm saying is, if you this chicken and egg situation, we can't pathologize and say it is a brain. So this is where I 100% agree with you, Suzanne. We can't say that it is a brain injury, even though there was a guy called Phineas somebody or other who did have a brain injury that killed that part of his brain, and he did lose his empathy. Phineas Gage, it's a very famous story. A spear went through his head on the railway or something, and he lost a whole lot of stuff. And
I wonder,
but anyway, it can be stimulated.
Yes. I wonder if people can be born without empathy. That's what I wonder.
It being possible.
What I found interesting when I looked at the research, because I've written a couple of articles about, most recently they said that they found that they noticed parts of the brain were lighting up with people who were diagnosed with ADHD. And the interesting thing about the studies that I read were they were not using the scientific method.
Right.
There are many, many reasons why parts of your brain light up, and 99% of them we don't understand.
Yeah.
In order for us to conjure a memory, there are so many parts of the brain that light up instantaneously or almost instantaneously that we don't quite understand where memories are stored. We also don't understand neural receptor connections, which is the ironic part about these SSRIs or psychotropic drugs, which desensitize and actually remove the ability for receptors in your neural net to function properly.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, Susan.
Because they don't understand how our brain even works. So when I see these studies, and I've seen many studies where they've said, well, we have an MRI image and it's different than the previous MRI image and it's different than the other previous. What they're pointing out is the fact that they've got 3 or 4 or 10 pictures that are different. But if you take a picture of a person walking and picture after picture after picture after picture, you're going to get 10 or 20 pictures that look completely different, and yet they are all of the same instant in time. And that's what we're looking at. The problem with psychiatry and the problem with mental disorders is there is no scientific method that has ever been used and is currently not established to use. And psychiatrists will tell you this, that it's trial and error, that it is subjective to their opinion, and the DSM-5, which is just basically a voted on opinion correlating to a SSRI that will be administered. And without the lacking the actual evidence, they will readily admit that they don't know what they're doing and what the medications are doing. So I don't mean to be combative, but yeah. I don't think that they've established medically, scientifically, that there actually is something that they can genuinely classify as a mental disorder in
certainly.
The brain.
I would like to find out whether these test subjects are pre-SSRIs or post-SSRIs when they do these MRIs or fMRIs.
What's an SSRI?
Standard.
What do you mean pre-SSRI or post? What are you talking about?
Did I get the wrong acronym there, Suzanne? Or?
Oh, I don't know.
What I find interesting expand on what your question was is in these studies, they choose people with the ADHD study. These people were already diagnosed with ADHD. They did not specify whether or not they were on any drugs to treat the disease, but they did specify that these people had been diagnosed, and some of them were diagnosed for many, many years. These are not just children. These are also adults that have been diagnosed. So I am assuming, and that is my assumption, that at some point that person, adult or child, would have been treated with a psychotropic drug. But to say that they have ADHD, which we don't know if they do, and then to take a picture of their brain saying, oh, look, I see the ADHD, which we're not even sure that they ever had, is not science, folks.
Yeah.
It's a way to get a drug into your body to see what it's going to do to you. And the funny thing is, these drugs are approved between 6 and 8 week studies. And then all of a sudden, we have people committing suicide within 3 days of taking the drug, murdering their entire family within 8 days of taking the drug, showing up at schools and shooting up people when they're on multiple of the dangerous three, which are Paxil, Zoloft, and Prozac. 99% of the violent instances that we see lately with the shootings in the schools and with the UPS or FedEx and the naval shooting, these people are all on drugs.
Yeah, but I also wonder if this ADHD and ADD ADD and ADHD aren't just something made up anyways.
They're all made up.
Yeah. Well, they used to call that when I was a kid, they used to call that being a brat, and they used to call that being normal. They used to call that being a normal kid.
Yeah.
And now they call it ADHD.
Yeah. Because if we can demonize it, then we can just drug it or shoot it. Because this is our lack of empathy in society, you know, like, and it's tied to that bloody Christian ethic, which is labeling things as evil, which I have terrible issues over, you know. Oh, he's evil. Oh, well, what can you do with evil? You can destroy it. Well, then he's a psychopath. Oh, well, we can just hang him.
Yeah. Look what they used to do to women back in the 17th century, Jill. There were hundreds of women all over the world that were burnt at the stake because they were called a witch. And a lot of people believe that they might have just been on their period. And they were called a witch and burnt. Yeah.
Well, from time immemorial, it's even written in the Bible that you want to stay away from a woman when she's unclean.
Yeah.
That's right. Watch out. Or she's newly pregnant. A newly pregnant woman is far more fierce than any other woman.
Well, see, that's
woman.
Another thing. That we believe that there is something called postpartum depression. Folks, when you have a baby, I've had two. If you've had a baby, you understand that as you go through the pregnancy, there are a flood of hormones that enter your body for the child and for yourself that are not normal to your everyday function, and it does make you a little kooky. And just like any other chemical that is being withdrawn from your body and your brain, again, you go through the withdrawal symptoms of those chemicals that are no longer being flooded after you give birth. It's not a mental disorder. It's called nature.
Well, when I first became pregnant, I became very fierce. And I think it's partly because you just know you have to make sure everything around you is okay. You know, a lot of women are very fierce when they're first pregnant. Have you noticed that, Suzanne?
I was very aware of my surroundings, and which is kind of funny because normally I'm not. Normally I'm kind of a klutz, but yeah. I was very aware of my surroundings, and I didn't want anyone touching my belly. I did not appreciate that part of it. You know this. And I'm that way with my children. I'm like a mama bear. You know, I'm very protective of them. Yeah. Even though I let them go, I'm watching. And I'm always at a safe distance, letting them work it out and deal with it. But I'm always watching them because I want them. Well, actually, it's more for myself. It's not for them. It's for me that I feel secure, that I know what my kids are doing. That's part of my job. But I don't think that it's like a personality disorder or a mental disease that I have, that I care about my children and I want to make sure that they're okay, even though they're exploring on their own.
Ooh, absolutely. Well, I've just noticed a lot of women, you know, when they're newly pregnant, they can be quite, well, tearful and all those different hormones as they're flooding, but they can also be very like, I'm just not taking that. And that you just sort of all of a sudden decide, oh, I'm just going to protect this part of my world now. Things are different now is the big mantra for it, isn't it? Things are different now, because things are different when you have an infant that you have to sort of protect. And
well, you
know. I don't know what it's got to do with psychopathy, but I'm sure it's got everything to do with it.
Misdiagnosis. That's what it's got everything to do with it.
That's right.
Yeah, there was a joke many, many years ago. I don't even know what it was now, Jill. It was quite a few years ago. There was a pregnant woman on this TV show, and the part of the scene was she had just about every single emotion that a woman can have when they're pregnant inside of a minute and a half. You know, and she was mad, she was happy, she was crying, she was sad, she was angry. It was just showing normal life, and I'm just about positive that that's probably happened to some women while being pregnant.
Back to a baby. Let's take it. It does. It does happen to women. And let's take it back. Well, I don't know. Within 1.5 minutes, that's a bit labile, but you know.
It was.
Why not?
It was just in the skit, and it was funny. But
I see a skit that would be hilarious.
Yeah.
Yes. But I was thinking that's a bit quick. But bring that back to little babies. Like, they've got the same sort of problems. Like, their frontal lobes are not working the same way. And little children, I mean, we know our frontal lobes aren't fully reattached, and they do detach in adolescence. They're not fully sort of working until we're 26. That's a nominal figure. But the point is, when people do these harms to the young children, that causes this sort of disassociation and these attachment disorders, well, as adults, we have to be very, very careful of the way that we try and put ourselves, which is really hard, into their little shoes and see what it's like from their perspective. Because sometimes, I mean, I remember when my kid was about 2, he was really difficult, you know, one day, and he seemed like just enormous. And then the next day, I look at little two-year-olds and I go, they're just tiny, you know, and yet children become too big. In other words, we think physically, emotionally, and mentally, children can cope with far more than they can actually cope with. They do really need to be, we need to tune into them and stay in our heart, in our soft spot. Even if we're being tough, we still need to be in our soft spot when we do it, or we do cause untold damage.
Yeah, we have to remember that they're working. I'm 36 years old, so I'm working on 36 years of trial and error and relationships and breakups and experiences. And my son is 7, so he's working with 7 years of all of that information, which compared to my 36 is nothing. He doesn't understand. Cool. If I... need to explain something of an adult nature in a childlike way. I need to dumb it down in a way so that he will understand, so that he doesn't attach an emotional value to it that's unnecessary and stress himself out over something that he doesn't even understand what is going on or why it's happening.
A 7-year-old doesn't need to deal with adult things, do they?
Absolutely, they don't. Keep it away from them. They don't need to see sexual activity, even in flirting. They don't need to care about drugs or alcohol. They don't need to see mommy and daddy fighting. They don't need to see people fighting on television and think that that's how relationships go. They're soaking up this information and trying to figure out how they're supposed to behave and how this system works. And so what we show them is what they're going to emulate, because that's what they do. They soak up information and then they try it out. So they go through these phases where it seems like they behave for 2 months, and then all of a sudden they start acting out, and you say, well, what was wrong with you yesterday? Because you were fine, and today you're all over the place. It's because that's the day that they're choosing to work out physically and emotionally all the information that they've been taking in. So we have to understand that they're just trying. And the more inappropriate information that we have for them to try to understand, the harder it's going to be for them to apply their information and be wise and have knowledge that is going to benefit them positively in their life.
Suzanne, you wrote an article about James Falloon, who found that his brain was doing fMRIs, James Fallon,
yes,
a scientist. He was a guy who was studying the brains of psychopaths, and then all of a sudden he discovered that in the pile of brains he put his own in there, because he knew there were psychopaths in the family, and he thought, oh, there's a psychopath's brain, and he picked it up and discovered it was his own brain. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Well, I found that very interesting because, again, he was looking at images that seemed to correlate with other people, and each one of the people that he was examining had completely different lives, completely different circumstances that led them to what they did and who they did it to and why they did it. And then to correlate with images or you know, to suppose based on snapshots. Was interesting to me that he had already agreed in his mind that there is this found in the brain, that it is not a social conditioning that has been going on for multi-generations and not a side effect or an effect of the amount of chemicals in our food and water and the psychotropic drugs that were being administered and taking. But just that, yes, I have this disorder in my family, and so I'm prone to genetics. And you understand, you mentioned the plasticity of the brain. What they found about genes is fascinating. We all grew up thinking that whatever your genes say is what you have and what you'll become, and you have no choice. But what they found are genes are switched on and off by environment. So what actually happens is there's a let's take the building of a house as an example. There's a concrete foundation that's laid, and then everything else that makes that house is all about the environment and everything that happens outside of the womb once you're already formed and you have all of the genetic material that you're ever going to have. And that is more influential than the foundation.
James, don't go on. I mean, I'll say this first and then keep going. James Falloon, or James Fallon, actually my son's, my ex-partner's name was James Falloon. He's dead now, but anyway. But James Fallon, his brain, Freeman's father is James Falloon. James Fallon put it down to he couldn't work out why he wasn't being a narcissist or a psychopath when he had the brain of a psychopath. So he decided it was to do with the incredibly warm family he grew up in. Do you remember that part of the article?
Oh, absolutely, I do. And one of the things that the gentleman, Sam, that you're interviewing, he says the same thing. I saw him in a documentary recently being touted as the self-aware narcissist.
Yeah.
What I find interesting is that our brains are made to take new information in and to shift our personal paradigm naturally. So to take in information to become self-aware would negate the narcissistic personality and would be able to, with the self-aware person, would be able to rewire their brain through new habits. Through the advent of self-awareness, it would just be a natural progression. Once you become aware of your personality, aware of your habits, aware of what positively affects your life and what negatively affects your life, it would just be a natural progression that you would want to do more of the positive things and learn better ways to be positive and less negative and learn ways to not be as negative. So it's kind of interesting that a self-aware narcissist would continue to be a narcissist, because it seems that it goes back to that attachment disorder that you were mentioning.
Attachment.
Yeah, exactly.
It suits him to avoid people by saying, oh, I'm a narcissist, there's no hope. So
absolutely.
And that's what I've said to Sam. And I haven't said it to him straight up, because I had a problem with my computer and I kept dropping out on that conversation. And Stephen got the first sort of part of the interview.
I did about half of the show there, Jill.
You did. And I haven't even replayed it to hear what you found out from him. Stephen, can you take over for a minute? I have to go somewhere.
Well, okay. Yes, I can.
Just ignore me. Keep going. It is your show.
Yes, it is. I
noticed.
I'm glad you realized that.
Thank you. Finally.
What did I miss? I had a phone call on my cell phone, and then I went to the boys' room too. So what did I miss?
And I'd left you a message saying, I want to go to the loo. And then you wrote, be right back. And I'm thinking, you or me? Like, what's going on here?
I didn't even see your message, but okay. Yeah, what did I miss? What were you talking about, Suzanne?
Oh, well, you'll have to go back and listen to the show.
Oh, okay.
She was saying that Sam back then, poor old Sam, that we both concur that it's all very easy to say I have an attachment disorder and I'm suffering from avoidant attachment, and therefore there's nothing I can do about it because it's all in the brain. And Suzanne and I agree that it's a cop-out. It's just another symptom of his avoidance.
Yeah. Okay.
And he's clinging onto the false self.
All right. Well, go ahead and go to the bathroom then. I wanted to bring up the fact that Dr. Twemlow, our resident psychologist or psychiatrist, whatever he is, evidently there is no psychological term for what the TV show Arrested Development is. They basically just call it a developmental arrestment. But I know that there are people, there are millions of people out there that seem to have this 3 or 4 year old's mentality in a adult body. I wonder if narcissism has a big part to play with that, Suzanne.
Well, sure. If you look at the common threads, like let's say Facebook or Twitter, and you see how people are making comments and then others are taking offense to it and defending themselves. They're defending themselves against a person who has no idea who they are, probably didn't look at their personal Facebook page to find out anything about them. And even if they did, I mean, how much can you know, because somebody works at some place and is married to somebody? You have no idea who that person is, what makes up that person, why they believe the way that they believe. But the strange phenomenon that I see is when someone's flawed opinion of you is presented in these common threads, the other person will take on that flawed persona and defend it as if they are defending themselves.
Well, certainly.
And it seems like elementary to me that if somebody says something that is not true about you, well, who cares what they said? Obviously, they don't know anything about you.
Obviously. So, yeah. And now we're also getting into the argument, how many of these 800 million people that are on Facebook, 800 million plus and growing, how many of them are actually real and how many of them are computer programs and who knows what?
Well, we have, cultural programs that have been going on multi-generationally. We have things that are passed down, even in our own family, our own family history. There are things that are passed down that no one really knows why until you get to one point and then you find out that it was, just because of some ridiculous reason. I have a very small oven, and I had dinner guests over, and so we were talking, and we were looking at my oven, and the wife and I, and we were laughing about the fact that you couldn't even fit a turkey in this oven, and I couldn't for Thanksgiving. We had it at my house, and my mother-in-law had to bring the turkey all the way from Portland to Washington to have Thanksgiving with
us.
They
didn't have turkeys in Washington?
But we're talking about this, and she says, well, when I was a little girl, we always took the legs off. And I asked my mother why, and she said, well, because it helps to cook the turkey. And she asked her mother, which is the woman's grandmother, and she said, well, it's to air out the turkey. And then they went to the great-grandmother, and the great-grandmother said, well, I had this little oven, and I couldn't fit the turkey inside, so I took the legs off. So there's three generations of women who thought this was some strange but grand tradition in their family, and yet it really had to do with the fact that the oven was not big enough. And I think that misconception of not understanding why we do the things that we do in our culture and where it originated gets us into so much trouble as we move forward with generations that we're raising and to go into the future, because we don't understand why we behave the way that we do, but we know it's wrong and we don't like the way it feels when it's done to us, but yet we continue to do it to other people.
Yeah.
And we think that, by joining a group or joining a religion or shaving our head and handing out flowers at an airport or meditating or gaining knowledge or becoming a conspiracy theorist that is not labeling a person, but we think that we are somehow enlightened by this. But what enlightens us is the actions that we take, and that tells everyone who we are, because you have to think about something before you do it. And what you're actually willing to do is who you actually are. We're never taught this. This is as a fact of life. If you think about food, you're going to get up and go to the refrigerator. And if I'm looking at you, get up from the couch and go to the refrigerator, I'm safely going to assume that you want food. If you get up and go to the car and get in it, I'm safely going to assume that you want to drive away. As simple as that is, you can make that as complex as you want, and it still comes out to the same answer, that we do what we think about. So we pay so much attention to words and promises, and we lie to each other left and right, and we never pay any attention to what people do, and we're constantly being bamboozled by other people, abused by other people. In a husband and wife scenario, the husband will beat the woman and then say he's sorry and bring her flowers, and everything's forgotten until 6 months later and the next incident happens.
Yeah.
And you say to yourself, why do you even put up with that? And the abused person says, well, he apologized. He meant it. No, he means what he does.
He sounded sincere.
He
sounded sincere. And he looks sincere. That's what I hear a lot of times from women. Well, you know, he was so sincere, and I do love him. We do have kids, and maybe he'll change. That's what they always say. Maybe they'll change.
People change when they want to. People change when their paradigm is shifted. People change when it benefits them. Now, whether or not that's a positive benefit, well, that's a subjective thing, because what's positive for me might not be positive for you. I might think that Brussels sprouts are horrible, which I do, by the way. But my husband loves Brussels sprouts.
I love them too.
See, if you serve me Brussels sprouts, I would not eat them. I would just push them to the side of my plate, and I would say, oh, I'm really full when I ate all the other food. And then you would never know that I don't like the Brussels sprouts unless you pay attention to the fact that every time you cook them, they magically appear in the garbage can after I'm not done with my food. But
does the dog eat them?
Exactly.
Here, Pooch.
So what's good for me might be different for you, and it's all dependent on how you were raised and what your value system is. And if we're going to live in a society, we have to agree on certain things. We're not going to kill each other. We're not going to steal from each other. We're not going to exercise pedophilia or bestiality or other things that are really kind of sick and twisted. We have these rules that are in place to protect each other. But other than that, the gloves are off. You can do whatever you want. You're free to express yourself. That is not conducive. Except, we don't even see that in our culture today.
But you're not even free to say you don't like Brussels sprouts, Susan. You're just going to pretend that you're full.
Exactly, because it's the culture in which we live in. See, right. It's a symptom where I am so out of touch with my authentic self, and I am not empathetic to Stephen's wanting to share Brussels sprouts with me, and maybe he cooks it the way that his mother always did, and he just loves it, and he wants to share that with me. But I'm so out of touch with the situation bred into me by our culture that I can't be honest with him and say, you know what, I'm so narrow-minded that I don't like Brussels sprouts, Sam, I am. I don't like green eggs and ham, and I will not eat them.
You know what I do, Jill? Jill? Yeah. Jill, you know what I do? I take them and put them on the grill. With a little bit of olive oil and some spices. Mmm, yum, yum, yum.
Oh, yum. Do you undercook them a little bit?
Yes. Well, I mean, they're a little bit crispy. They're not completely done, yes.
Maybe you have to try some of Stephen's Brussels sprouts, Susan.
Well, now I have to because we've had this conversation.
What I did with my kids was I used to give them homeopathic amounts of vegetables they didn't like, and I'd say, just put that tiny bit of that on your tongue, because the body has to taste some things about 20 times before it realizes it's poison.
Seven times, yeah.
I think it's 20, but it might be seven. Anyway, this brings us to science, which is the point I wanted to make. You know, here we are, 2014, we think we know everything, as usual. Don't we always? Isn't that so typical of our society? We think we understand the mind. We think we understand the brain. We think we understand so many things that we really do not understand. And that ties it back to what, I like the way you're challenging the sciences, Suzanne, because it's an important thing to do.
We have to understand what good evidence is, and unfortunately we're not going to be taught it in school, and maybe our parents are not going to teach it, maybe they're just not interested, but evidence means that something actually happened. Theories means that it might have happened, and we cannot judge people and punish people for things that we think they might have done.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the Skeptic Society, I keep forgetting to do this, it's a quick $100,000. The Skeptic Society is saying that they'll give people $100,000 if they can prove that you can douse water. Well, we used to douse water as kids with willow sticks, and literally the stick would be bending and going, grrr, like it was all your force to hold the willow stick from not, you know, just this straight stick would just be bending, 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 pulling towards the ground. And yet, you know, I think lots of people just don't prove things. But I keep thinking I must go out and practice dowsing and pick up a quick 100,000. It would be very handy. But, yeah, people just don't believe things unless they actually see them.
And the great part about it is you can try anything. You don't have to say, I don't believe in dowsing. Well, your belief is inconsequential. Let's see if it actually works.
Exactly.
We somewhere, I remember when news switched from Walter Cronkite to opinion pieces everywhere. You know, my opinion, sources say, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. I'm happy that you voiced your opinion. Now, what are the facts? What am I actually supposed to be concerned about?
Yes,
but when it's all muddied and it's intermingled and no one can tell the difference, guess what? You get paranoid people who just lock themselves in their houses and give up on life because they don't understand what is going on in their world.
Yeah, Suzanne, that reminds me of a funny story. Our Vin here at People's Internet has been to America before, and he said he was watching what we call the nightly news over here, and he just looked at it and laughed and said, is that what you call news over here in America? We would be calling up the switchboard at the news agency and telling them to keep their opinions to themselves and give us the news. They don't do that kind of stuff over there, evidently.
What do you mean? What are you talking about? I don't get it.
They just present the news over there, from what I understand. I don't know, but our presenters are opinion makers and society changers.
But just the very news that you get is an opinion.
Well, sure it is. It's got a spin on it. It's either got a left or a right, or a right spin on it.
So what
I was talking about climate change in an interview I did earlier. And the problem I have with climate change is there is propaganda for both sides. There's propaganda for the oil companies that say that it's not man-made, and there's propaganda for Al Gore and the UN that say it is man-made. And somewhere in the middle is the actual truth, but we we hear something, we have an emotional response, we take that into our personal paradigm, and it becomes our truth, and we will defend it to the death, because if we don't, then we ourselves will wither away and die, and we can't have that. And that is where the problem actually lies, where we finish the conversation after the other person stops talking. And it's that conversation we have with ourselves where we convince ourselves of some right or wrong or some egregious act or some righteous act that is where the damage to ourselves actually happens. And then we do it to ourselves.
Yes.
Yes. I was trying to get that out there, but I got a little frog in my throat.
French frog? Did you eat it? They're
no.
into food in the chat box.
Are they?
They're trying
yeah.
to eat, they want to eat kale. Kale yeah. is absolutely delicious.
Swiss chard, okay. broccoli.
I must yeah. not read this chat box. It does it to me every time.
Yes, it does. It's going pretty quickly tonight, Jill. Normally
it's
this
flying.
Time, for, and normally
Suzanne,
this time for me,
we've
it's
got
6 dead.
Minutes. Sorry, Steve.
Oh wow.
6 minutes. We've
well,
got.
Well, how long do we go for?
But you got a lot more than 6 minutes if you want it.
Oh, all right then. Well, Suzanne.
If Suzanne has to leave, that's fine.
Keep going, Suzanne. You're a whip. I would like to have you on the debating team with me when I was in school.
I was never on. I should have been on the debating team.
I was captain and whip, and my claim to fame now is like whenever I come across any of these young QCs that all went to the same private schools I went to, I thought, well, I don't know. If you were ever in the debating team, I whipped your ass,
What was a debating team anyways? We didn't have that in my high school anyways, Jill. They had taken that type of thing out long, long ago. But did
oh, well, somebody says –
was it just an ad hominem hurling feast or what?
But what happens is you someone makes a title, which is psychopaths are made, not – psychopaths are born, not made.
Right.
Okay?
And then someone calls you crazy? No.
And then Suzanne has to say, yes, that is true. Or no, it's not true. And I take the opposite side. So then I have to argue, even if I don't believe it, I argue the case that psychopaths are born that way. And Suzanne argues that psychopaths are not born that way. So then we have a debate. And whoever comes up with the most cunning argument and the most so-called evidence wins. And
okay, it's not just an ad hominem hurling feast then, right? Is it? You actually have to have an argument.
You have to have an argument, yeah.
Okay.
And it's best if you can make them laugh, which Suzanne and I would both do, I'd imagine. So
well, you know,
she'd be good.
I can only draw on, here in America, these so-called news agencies and their nightly programs where they have debates and all they're doing is hurling ad hominem attacks back and forth.
No, you have to
That's
find the other person's argument and then rip it to shreds. Like you have to anticipate what the other person's argument's going to be and then say, or after you've heard it, because as whip, you're the last speaker, so you get to rip apart everybody's arguments. So you rip their argument apart and explain why it is not a sound argument.
Yeah. But like I said, I can only draw on what I see here in America. So, Suzanne, do you have to leave us or can you continue on?
Oh, I can continue on.
Okay. Do you need a break or anything?
No. I'm on a roll. Let's go.
Okay. Yeah. Let's keep going, Jill.
Well, Suzanne, you just did an interview. You've been doing a whole lot of big interviews in the last few days. I'm sorry to take it to you, but I want to promote Suzanne Purcell because I really like her very much and she's just a fantastic woman. And it's so good to have such smart women around. And
she is awesome.
And sexy. She's everything. She's every ideal woman, really, Suzanne.
I'm really Chaka Khan. We'll just start that rumor right now. I am Chaka Khan.
Oh, goodness. Do you even understand that joke, Jill?
No, but I laugh anyway. Because I imagine.
You'll have to explain that to her, Suzanne.
She did the song I Am Every Woman.
Yeah.
If you're old enough to remember that song.
If you're
song,
old enough to remember, definitely. Yes.
Can we play that song? I'll go and look for it while you two keep talking. Who did it? What's her name?
Chaka Khan.
Okay. And what is it? I Am Every Woman.
Yes.
I Am Every Woman.
Well, just type that into YouTube. You might be able to find it that way.
Okay.
But, yeah, she didn't really have a lot of hits or anything, but, that one was a funny one, or a good one anyways, but, I guess maybe back to narcissism. My dad died in 2008 and he was just shy of his 75th birthday. For as long as I can remember Suzanne, he always had a childlike mentality. I mean, he wasn't slow or anything. It was just, he had the me thing, all of his life. What have you done for me? What do I get? You know, that type of thing.
It's hard to live with someone who is never satiated, and they always want attention, and they always want accolades, and they are always taxing you emotionally for attention. It's very difficult. For children, it makes my daughter is a lot more attached. I'm waiting for her to have that moment where she falls in love with her father so that she can detach from me, because I am her entire world, and I just I can't seem to get away from her.
Yeah.
My son, on the other hand, is completely detached. And even for a while, up until recently, actually, he didn't even want us to hug him. He was going through this phase where he was just too good to be hugged or kissed, especially from his mother.
Not
physical affection whatsoever.
Not in front of the friends, huh, Mom?
Not at all. Not at all.
Wow.
And he switched, you know, and a couple of months ago, and now he lets me hug him, or he'll sit and snuggle with me watching something, on YouTube, or just, he's just more demonstrative. He'll actually hug his little sister.
Yeah. I was just the opposite. I always beat my younger brother up for some reason. I don't know.
Oh, that's interesting. I think too many thoughts and they've all gone too fast. There's the song. I Am Every Woman.
Well, I don't think I'm going to play it, Jill.
Dedicated to Suzanne Purcell.
Yeah.
Who is every woman plus some.
What, are you ready for it, Jill? Is that what you're saying?
You're ready for it. I've given it to you. It's in the link. It's up to you when to play it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to get me something to drink, so I guess I could play it now.
Cool.
That means we have to mute.
Okay.
Okay, that's enough of the fade there. It's just going to keep fading and fading and fading. And we're back for the second hour, everyone. I still have Jillian and Suzanne.
Hello.
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 We're going to continue on with narcissism, or we're going to talk about some things. I wanted to ask you, how big is both of your sites getting, Suzanne? Everyone can catch Suzanne on either OccupyCorporatism.com or the USIndependent.com, at which I am a contributor, as well as many great people are, like Thomas Sheridan and Dr. Rima Labo. You can help me out with some others there, Suzanne.
Absolutely. Dane Wigington. We have Christoph Lehman, who has his own website, NSNBC.
Vinny Eastwood.
Vinny Eastwood.
He was just on a previous show. Yeah.
Awesome. Good friend of mine. I have some wonderful international contributors, one woman who is in Yemen and reporting what's going on in the Middle East from there. Three juris doctorate attorneys who write articles and do reports on what's going on with foreclosures. So if you want to contact them about questions about your foreclosure, I suggest that you look at the bio page and get in contact with them. It's all about really good sourced information so that we can do something about this instead of complaining about it on Facebook all day long.
Absolutely. I was just on the one site, Occupy Corporatism, and I happened to across one of those things that kind of flashed by there, you know, on the particular articles that have been submitted in that, and or maybe it was on the US Independent, one or the other, but one was about the foreclosures and the housing. And that, I don't know if you know it or anything, but there's a very little known, thing out there that people can do to save themselves from foreclosure and still stay in their homes. our group here, People's Internet, they just have coined it the official offer. I guess we could probably talk about that a little bit if you'd like to, Suzanne.
Oh, absolutely. It's something that is not talked about enough, and it's happening. It's like a silent epidemic that no one wants to discuss.
Well, it is. And people over there in that area, Ireland and Scotland, and I'm not so sure about the UK, but possibly they take it a lot more seriously. They take it a lot more of a slight on their name, on their good name, you know, if they're not able to pay their mortgage or all the rest of their bills. There have even been a lot of people committed suicide because of it, because of the heartache that it's caused them. And well, there's been quite a few people over the last 5 years that have saved their homes and are still in them, and they're not paying their full mortgage.
Yeah, one of the contributors is Scott Staffney, and he has a law firm. He's a constitutional attorney, and he works with the 9th District, which encompasses Washington State, Oregon, and California.
Okay.
And it's one of the most influential districts as far as on the federal level goes in our court system, divided into the different districts as you go from the east to the west coast. And he has fought successfully 41 cases, and so there are families that are able to stay in their homes, and for the ones who had their homes sold out from under them, they'll be receiving monetary compensation for the loss of their home. And we need more attorneys like this. I know he's not the only one, but he was saying to me a couple of days ago that there needs to be more networking between these attorneys, because they are appearing to fight independently without coalescing and working with each other. There needs to be unity in this, because across the board, it's the exact same story over and over again with the robo-signing and the use of MERS. Completely illegal activity, obviously blatant illegal activity going on. And because it's in the midst of a court case, and someone would have to sit down and read the opinion of the judge, which I have done. Staffney is, shared with me 2 or 3 of his cases so far, and I wrote articles to bring this conversation forward, because it doesn't matter if it's not you today. It doesn't matter if you're renting. Somebody owns that mortgage, and if the mortgage gets foreclosed on, even if you're a renter in an apartment complex, you're going to be homeless.
Yes, you are. Yeah. And the way I understand it, this official offer, as they've coined it, Suzanne, you know, it's a handwritten document. Goes a little bit like I, so-and-so, are able and are maybe ready to pay such and such on my mortgage, even though the mortgage may be like $800 a month. I am prepared to pay $200 a month. That's all I can afford. And more or less signing it and sending it to the bank makes it a legal document, and the bank really cannot not take it. If they do, they are washing themselves of that debt, they're washing you of that debt. I know that many in our group.
With some people that I've worked with who are fighting foreclosures in Washington State, one of my good friends, Michelle Darnell, she's been doing this for close to 5 years now, and what she's noticed is it is literally the ignorance of the homeowner, which by no fault of their own, by accepting paperwork that has no legal standing, but by accepting it, you are accepting the terms. It would be like if you owe a bill collector $100 and you send him a check for $5. If he cashes that check, he's accepting that as payment.
Absolutely.
So you can just keep paying him $5
That's
no matter
right.
what.
That's right.
He's accepted that payment. But we don't understand. And it's so convoluted. See, people don't understand that from the time that you sign that document, they're already processing your foreclosure papers.
Certainly they are, yeah. And they're already looking to sell it off to another bank.
Absolutely. And it's insured 8 times.
Yes, it is.
So they're getting 8-1. It's in their best interest to foreclose.
Absolutely.
So they're getting paid by the insurance company. They got paid by the bailout. Now, in all the homes that were bailed out when we bailed out the banks with the foreclosures debacle, all of those homes were paid for. So why are you paying on a home? It was paid for. You don't owe any more money.
Oh, yes, yes.
the way in which they deal the foreclosure process, your acceptance of it lends legal standing to it. Your non-participation in the process invalidates their legal standing. So once you get to court and you can show that there was coercion, you can show that MERS was used, because that 18-digit number at the top that starts with M, that's siphoned through MERS. The Word documents that they make up and send to you with the robo-signing on it that you accept as your foreclosure notice, all this thing lends to, and then going to litigation is extremely expensive, and most people, if they try it pro se, they're really going to get messed up. To find an attorney who can do it and is willing to do it on a pay grade, it's very difficult. So the banks win. They win by default. They win by their circumstance. Well, yeah. They win by our ignorance.
They win by ignorance, yeah. And as I mentioned, that once you sign the mortgage papers, they are already looking to sell your mortgage off to another company, which is fraud. And it, however many banks buy your mortgage up is even that more of a fraud.
Well, what they did is they bundled everything up and then they cut it into pieces. And then they took those pieces and they cut those into pieces and ad infinitum. And they sold off these pieces. So what ends up happening, Michelle was explaining to me, is you'll get a foreclosure notice from five different lenders. And that actually happened to one homeowner that came to her that she worked with.
Yeah.
Five different lenders were all foreclosing on the same property. It doesn't make any sense unless you understand what the mortgage-backed securities actually were.
Right.
And so these are investors who were given allegedly triple A grades investments, which were actually debts that the homeowner
toxic
was never
debt.
In a position to pay.
Toxic debt, yeah.
Toxic, right, exactly. So our inability to understand the process, and I've looked into the process and it's boring. It blows your mind. It's like an intricate web. As soon as you think you figured it out, it gets more complicated. The good thing about what Staffney has done, and the reason why he's won consecutively 41 cases, working on his 42nd right now, is that he looks into the intricacies and shows the judge, this is against the Washington State Deeds of Trust Act. This is robo-signing. This is a violation of contract law.
It is.
Without showing these things, you're just left to the wind, and so you move out of your home and into a tent city or into with your family, which can't take care of you, and you've got six or seven families living in a single family dwelling. That's not unheard of nowadays.
Not at all, and they're switching back and forth. You know, the original bank that you signed with might get your mortgage back someday. Who knows?
Well, the thing is that if it's a violation of contract law and it's a violation of, like in Washington State with the Deeds of Trust Act, they cannot foreclose on your home. They have to withdraw. If they've already seized your home and sold it, they have to give you the money that they incurred from that illegal sale. Period. It's getting a judge to see that. Through documentation and evidence. And unfortunately, we don't live in a society where we even keep papers. I mean, when was the last time? My mother still has like boxes of even old bills.
Mine does too.
But we throw everything, we shred everything, or we send it to a shredder. We don't keep any documentation. And when it comes time to prove our case, we don't have anything to stand on.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Exactly. That's, part of the 600 plus million trillion, not million, 600 plus trillion that's our toxic debt that is going to come do one of these days, the ultimate bubble of all, you know.
Well, and it's not even our debt. It's their debt.
Yeah.
They're the ones who made the decision to use the stock market as a casino. We
and the
didn't
fraud.
Do that.
Yep.
And if they had asked us, would we said, okay, fine, take our money? You know, people don't understand the reason why you don't get your check cashed immediately when you deposit it into the account. The reason why it takes 24 to 48 hours is because they're playing with that money for those 24 to 48 hours, and they need time
Certainly.
In order to put it back.
Certainly.
Okay?
Yep.
That's a very simple trick that they use.
Yeah.
But that's the only reason why you can't get your money right away, why they have to call the other bank and they have to verify the funds. That is BS.
Bull, yeah.
It's a number on a computer screen. They hit enter, it goes from, the number moves from one computer screen to another, into one account to another. That's all. There's no verification of anything because nothing was exchanged.
It does. Every $100 you put in there, they take and loan out 90 of it.
And right, but they also play it overnight on the stock market. While you and I are sleeping, the markets on the other side of the world are running.
Certainly.
So they're over there playing with your money in China and in Australia and on the other side of the world. And then while they're sleeping, while we're playing with the stock market, they're using our money on that stock market
And it's all a big game, and that's what people just don't realize about it. They're just playing games with each other. As far as the governments and the elite in that. People think that somebody can actually make any money off of the stock market or anything like that, and it doesn't really happen. The people that are making the money are the people that are working the stock markets in New York and Hong Kong and London and Sydney or wherever it happens to be, you know?
Sure. If we understood the way that the system works, we would, I think, at least take pause to decide whether or not we want to be part of it. You know, the old excuse is, oh, well, we're so busy living our lives and going to work and paying our bills that we don't have time to eat right. We can't afford to eat right. We can't do this, that, and the other. We can't make the changes. Of course we can. If all of your conveniences were taken away tomorrow, you would find a way to cook, clean, bathe, get to work,
or you would
do
starve.
All the things you normally do. Exactly.
Or you would starve, yeah.
Exactly. So since necessity is the mother of invention, maybe instead of having this fight or flight feeling, we should recognize the situation that we're in, which is survival. And if we want to get ahead of survival, we're going to have to learn to become entrepreneurs. We're going to have to learn to come up with something that people need that is ethical, that we can provide to our community and our culture. When you've got 40% of college students graduating that have absolutely zero chance of getting a job, even though they've been in college for 2 to 8 years, and maybe interning for another 10 if you're a physician, you have zero chance of getting a job. So we see a boom of internet businesses right now, people who are taking that entrepreneurial leap and investing in themselves instead of investing in another corporation or a company that's not going to treat them fairly. That is, to me, is a huge shift in thinking. That is how we used to think back in this country when we started all of the great corporations that now we hate so much because they've become too big for their own britches and too overreaching and completely psychotic in their behavior. But, I mean, what do you expect? You've got a board of directors who are completely out of touch with reality. They don't have a wallet. They don't go to a restaurant and pay a bill. They don't go into a clothing store and buy anything. They are above that.
Yeah.
Think about it. Paris Hilton has not paid a bill. I don't think she's ever paid a bill.
No, she probably hasn't.
She doesn't know what that's like.
I don't think she has a – well, maybe she's got a driver's license, but I don't
even
know.
She lives in a completely different world than you and I do. And reality for her and what's important for her is completely different than what's important for us.
Well,
and to meld the two and have empathy and sympathy for each side of the coin, I think is what's going to help us get to a place where we all feel comfortable with our economic or social or emotional standing.
Yeah. You happen to bring up a good point about having ambition. A lot of people today don't even have ambition. They are so arrogant or so narcissistic that they are just willing to do whatever it takes, whether it's cheat, lie, and steal to get to the top. And that really isn't all that ambitious. I mean, some might call it ambitious, but I actually think it's more cowardly to do something that way.
Well, that's an interesting way of looking at it because it in some ways it's, and I don't mean this as a slight on you at all, but in some ways it's part of the slave mentality. See, we're all capable of being successful. We're all capable of setting goals for ourselves and achieving them. We're all capable of introspection and finding out what our strong points and our weaknesses are and using our weaknesses for our own positive benefit, and learning new behaviors to replace behaviors that we don't particularly like. And because we're all capable of doing this, and at certain stages in our life that ability is taught out of us, or we're told that it's a futile effort to better yourself, that you want to go and do this other thing, puts us in this position where we don't even think about doing anything. Well, we couldn't be successful because that's for people like that. I came from a poor background. I couldn't possibly be successful. Lots of people who are successful, lots of people who are millionaires and billionaires do not have a college education, and some of them don't even have a high school diploma.
Sure, but they might be associated with a family that does. And
well, the thing about this is successful there, Suzanne, but I know what you mean by that. You mean financially successful.
Well, yes, because in our culture, we define our self-worth by how much we have, how much money we have in the bank, how much our toys cost, what kind of way we can present ourselves, how expensive we can put up the false identity of who we are and present that out to the world. So since we define ourselves that way, success has to be monetary.
Sure.
Well, but we define ourselves as having a roof over our head. That's rather helpful too, and you do need money to do that these days. So it seems. Go on, Stephen.
Yes, you do. And why does everybody have to? Well, not that you equated success and wealth with being brutal and evil or those kind of traits, but normally that's kind of what it takes.
In order to do anything, you have to have a drive and a desire to do so. And if you want to see that dream to the end, you're going to have to go through the ups and downs, the failures and the successes in order to make that happen. Whether it is being a good mother or whether it is being the CEO of a multi-billion dollar corporation, the steps are still the same. The problem is that we don't like to do any work. We sit in a cubicle and call that work. And it's very emotionally taxing, but it's not work. Go and work on a farm. Go hang out on a farm this summer, and you'll find out what work actually is.
Oh, yes, I have.
And it's completely different than what we go through in the cities.
I have when I was a kid. And I've also worked in several different factories for 11 years in my life too, and
that is work.
I do know what work is. Absolutely.
And we go home and we sit in front of the television and we don't talk to each other, and we're emotionally drained by the shows that we're watching, so we're always in this state of depletion and needing a break and needing to get away. Get away from what? You haven't done anything yet.
Yeah.
We do what's expected. we're like, oh, we have to put the food in the microwave and cook it, and it takes 30 seconds, and this is taking too long. You know, do you ever thought that you could make the pizza yourself? It would be fun.
Oh, yeah.
The whole family gets involved and makes the dinner. The whole family sets the table. Remember setting the table? Remember sitting down? Remember everybody did the dishes afterward?
Yeah.
Remember everybody went to the front room and mommy and dad had coffee while the kids played their instruments or read stories? Or we played, in my house, we played checkers or Uno or Battleship. We did things together.
Yeah.
We don't do that anymore.
I remember seeing something a few years back. I don't even know what it was. It was some kind of a funny little skit or something, but mom was cooking dinner on the stove, and she had the table set, and a couple of kids walked in the house, a boy and a girl, and they had weird looks on their faces, and the table was set, and they looked at mom and said, "Mom, what's going on here?" And she said, "Well, we're going to have dinner tonight." They kind of looked at each other and said, "Oh, we are we?" they were just dumbfounded because mom was cooking and the table was set, and they didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, it's a lost art. We do that. That's how I was raised. That's what we do. And everybody cleans off their place, and after dinner, we all sit down and talk. Or my son likes to read out loud, and it's good for him because we always hit a word that he doesn't know, so we get out the dictionary. It's wonderful. We spend time together right before bed. My husband will go upstairs and read the kids a book before bed and sit and hang out with them And that was a tradition he started with our son. And they know that we love them. They know that it's safe. They know that even though we're angry at them and maybe they didn't do what we wanted them to that day, we still love them and everything's okay. That is, to me, the best thing I can possibly do is to create that security that everything's okay. It doesn't matter who you were today. You have the opportunity to be a better person tomorrow. So let's forgive everything that happened today and let's move forward on a clean slate tomorrow. Because when you go out into the outside world, you are judged. You are judged unfairly. You are judged on supposition. And that's it. And you have to prove this false self that they imbued on you.
That's right. You have to prove that you're not what they think you are. And that's really a shame. That's what it's always been like.
Can you prove a negative?
Yeah. Especially here in America, you seem to be guilty, or you have to prove your innocence to, you have to prove your innocence here in America, it seems to be, anyways, the last, 5 years or so.
Yeah, I've learned recently that when people make statements about me that are untrue, that is more of a tell to me of their ignorance than anything else.
Yeah, especially
because if they were a mature person, they would have come to me and said, I heard this. Is that true?
Exactly.
And have the open mind to accept my answer and then make that judgment on their own, at least when they have both sides of the story.
But this is that word, you know, when you're saying if they're truly mature, because then, you know, this is this analysis of what is truly mature, because what you're asking them to do is not project onto you and not to transfer or counter transfer. And you get into, you know, it's really hard for people to see you as you are.
Absolutely. These are skills that we can teach our children. Siblings, that is the greatest place to learn that, because they mirror each other and they annoy each other with the things that they are annoyed themselves. And if you can teach them that they're projecting onto each other and that there's really no conflict between each other than the normal conflict for mommy and daddy's attention and, I'm bigger than you are and all of that, which is absolutely normal, then they can grow positively and be okay with and deal positively with those adverse moments when they are not being fair to each other.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You typing something there, Jill? Okay.
Sorry, I'm just wondering if anyone wants to choose a song.
Choose a song for what?
For your show. Well, I mean, just suggest one.
No, I've got songs.
You got them sorted?
Yeah.
I know, but some people have amazingly funny songs. Yeah, go on.
No, you can go ahead.
I would suggest a private song.
A private song.
Primus. Sailing the Seas of Cheese.
All right, I'll Google that song? For you. And you two are hot. Just keep talking. While you're on fire,
that?
Stay on fire.
Primus? No, I don't.
You don't remember Primus?
Is that the name of the band?
Yeah.
No, that's a new one on me.
What's the name of the song?
The album was Sailing the Seas of Cheese.
Oh, goodness. No, I don't think I know that.
Oh. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Like Fish. that kind of hippie funky.
Fish. Is that another song?
P-H-S-I-H.
That's a new one for me, too.
Oh.
Must be a West Coast thing. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm from the East Coast.
Oh, okay. Okay. Must be an East Coast thing. But anyways. Yeah, it's... I don't know. Sometimes I think it's just... I don't know whether it's some kind of a brain disorder or people with the drive for money. It seems
Think
to be
about how we changed in the 80s. That was drastic.
Yeah, the meat times, right? Yeah,
exactly. That changed us dramatically from the 60s, where we were figuring out that we wanted unity. And we wanted to grow together and we wanted to create together. Then in the 80s, two decades later, they have the me generation where it doesn't matter. And remember the books Less Than Zero and American Psycho that came out?
Sure.
The Breakfast Club. This was highly influential
because
it shifted our consciousness as a society from let's do this together. You know, I want to buy the world a Coke and that whole peace loving all around the world to Gordon Gekko.
I've heard just recently that Wall Street, the movie with Michael Douglas and Charlie Sheen, the character Gordon Gekko was actually loosely based on somebody. I don't remember who it was now, but
If you want to see a film that embodies the psychosis that is the Wall Street broker, banker, the Wolf of Wall Street is a film. This is a man. He's still around. He went to prison, and now he is a motivational speaker.
Who's that?
His name is Jordan Belfort.
Okay.
Belfort, I'm sorry. And the film has Leonardo DiCaprio. It's one of the most disturbing films I've ever seen in my life. It really is. What this man did without any feeling to people who didn't have any money and made millions and millions of dollars off of the backs of people in penny stocks, became one of the most successful people in his industry, and ended up going to prison, and now is a motivational speaker and making, again, millions of dollars off of the backs of people who are ignorant and think that he's somehow an authority on what you should do in ethical salesmanship and marketing. Everything that he's done in his life is unethical. He doesn't know what ethics. I don't even know if he knows how to spell the word ethics.
That's something me and Jill talk about a lot. Ethics aren't even taught in school anymore. It used to be one of the, you know, it used to be a part of a school curriculum, but not anymore.
No, what's taught is this new brand of what they call tolerance, which is actually you can do whatever you want to me and I won't complain about it.
Yeah, the PC.
Yes. And it is a way of controlling people from the inside out. It is a way of controlling the inner dialogue in your brain when you are afraid to say something because you might offend someone. But if someone is offended by what you have to say, it's because you have touched them personally in their personal paradigm and they are in conflict with their authentic self. It has nothing to do with you. Proactive communication would be that the other person says, you know, that really touched me and it makes me wonder about these beliefs I have. That would facilitate conversation. And maybe it comes to a compromise. Maybe it comes down to we'll agree to disagree, but both people walk away better from it.
Sure.
Instead of arguing with each other and saying, well, you know, you don't believe the way I believe, so you must be COINTELPRO, or you must be a sheep, or you must be stupid, or you don't
get it.
Must
be a shill, yeah.
Exactly. No, it's a misunderstanding, cultural misunderstanding that has been fostered for generations. And we're seeing the fruits of that labor. And it's destroying our ability to have meaningful relationships with each other. It's evident by just look around you.
Oh yes, it is. Yeah, I know quite a few people. If you don't agree with everything they say, you're some kind of a shill or an agent or whatever the case is. You know.
Absolutely, and that's just not true. What is actually true is what actually happened. Our perspective of what happened is how our brain processed the information through all of the filters and what we accept as reality. But that normally doesn't mean what actually happened. That's not indicative of what happened. Like if you witness 20 people witness an accident, they'll get 20 different versions of what happened, all the way down to the color of the car, even though the car's sitting right in front of you.
Yeah, certainly they will. And this current dictatorship or junta, whatever you want to call it, if you don't agree with him, you're a racist, of course.
Oh yeah, that word has been redefined to the point of stupidity. The word rape has been redefined. I came across an article today that if you are in a online game with other people and they kill you and you're a woman, is that the same as rape? No, it's not. Rape has nothing to do with that. Don't equate something that egregious of an act, a violation of someone personally, all the way down to the core of their body. To an online simulated game. That's ridiculous. We don't understand what we do to each other if we can equate the two.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think it was about a month back. I caught a little poster on Facebook. Or maybe it was some kind of a poll or something. I think somebody went to a school and asked a bunch of teenagers when it was okay to rape a girl. And, you know, there was so many of the boys that, did I show you that, Jill?
No, I'm just laughing. When is it okay to rape a girl?
Yeah. When is it? Well, yeah. No, that's the question that they posed to a bunch of teenagers.
Ridiculous.
And, evidently every single one of the teenagers had a vote, and there were some excuses that were given that it was okay to rape a girl. Like if you spent a lot of money on the girl and she didn't put out, then that was like 13% of the, or 6% of the girls said it was okay, and 18% of the boys said it was okay, and so forth and so on. And it was just absolutely so crazy.
We let our children rear themselves enough, and we don't have these conversations. Like, if there's two things that I picked up while talking with Jamie and Suzanne before, you know, one of the strongest points was the importance of teaching, talking to kids about all of these issues. And we just don't talk about these issues and analyze them and dissect them enough.
Well, how can we? Mom and Dad both have 2 and 3 jobs. They have to have their appearances. They have to look like they're better than the Joneses across the street, Jill. I mean, come on.
Well, we can. If we've got time to cook a meal, we've got time to talk to a kid.
Yeah, I know. And you know what I say a lot here in the last couple of months? It's going to take a lot of sacrifice, and it's going to take a lot of soul searching to really find out what people want.
What do you mean?
That's our main problem. We don't know what we want. We're told what we want almost from day one. And
by the TV, right?
It's not what we want.
By the TV, yep.
Right, so we're conflicted because we're told to want these things, but deep down inside, we don't want them, or we want a different version of them.
Well, we're told what's...
Why do we turn the TV... Why do we leave the TV on?
Why?
That's a question. Why do
it's mesmerizing,
people put
Jill.
The TV on?
It's mesmerizing.
My mother used to leave the TV on 24 hours a day, and this was back when it would turn to snow, right?
It's the babysitter.
And you'd wake up to the snow, and my mother just felt comforted with the television on.
I've woken up to snow before myself, Suzanne. But unfortunately, those days are over because we have the 24-hour media now.
Oh, yeah. They used to play the national anthem, and then it would go to snow.
Yeah, the red and blue lines would be vertically on the screen there for about a minute or so, and then it would go to snow, and we'd go, shh.
That was it. Go to bed.
You're going to bed.
There's nothing more to watch.
Yep.
Then they realized that people were up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and then they came out with the infomercial, and it was all over after that.
Oh, my God. I've got a television. I just remember the infomercials. They're on every channel, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Yeah, they figured out with certain, like the USA channel over here and TBS, they figured out that they could have all night stuff going on because people were up at 2 o'clock in the morning and they were so ingrained in these beta waves that they would buy anything that they saw.
There's also naturally like 20% of the American population works third shift, and another 8 or 10% of the population is just night owls, and they're up at that time.
Let's talk about turning the television off. I think that's so important, you know, to give it, because see, sometimes even if I've got my grandchildren here and I don't have a television, but I have YouTube and I can't work out what to do with them next, I'll go, all right, we're going to watch a science program now, whether you like it or not, you know, and I'll put my 10-year-old in front of something on electromagnetism, which is, you know, it's educational, so it's sort of interesting. But I just did that last week, it's to avoid being creative. We're consuming instead of creating again, aren't we?
I do make
creative choices, but I still can put kids in front of televisions. You know, the universal pacifier, the television. What will I do with this kid? He's just, I don't know what to do with him. I'll just go and put him in front of something and give him a bit more information. You know, instead of going and gardening or tidying a room or painting a wall, or I mean, I do those things as well, but I'm saying when I slip into that weakness. So, you know, I can see I've sort of fight the fight. And usually win it, but
I've got to bring you on
and give them a balance. But I there are phases in your life where you just let them watch TV or play computer games.
I've got to bring you on more and more often, Suzanne, because this chatbot is just going nuts.
Oh no!
It's just going so fast I can't even keep up with it.
Yeah, well, you and she are a really, really good team.
Yeah, I think we are too.
Yeah,
she's so awesome. It doesn't matter who she's with.
Oh, stop it. I'll put the check in the mail today. Jeez. I know. I'm sorry. I was late on my payment. You and Michael.
No,
but
it's good.
I think I think it was right around that time too, the late 70s. Well, CNN came up in, I think, what, like 1980, and it was soon after that many of these companies started going to the 24-hour things, whether it be rerun channel. Yeah, I mean, imagine that, a rerun channel.
Yeah, a channel
There
where,
are channels for
what was that?
reruns.
Nick at Night.
Nick at Night, yeah, but there's,
Yeah.
I mean, there was the Cartoon Networks. There wasn't any of that kind of stuff when I was a preteen and a
No, you
teen,
had to
but
get up. Listen, folks, we
Saturday
got
morning.
up at 7 o'clock in the morning, sometimes 6 o'clock in the morning, and drug our little 7-year-old sleepy butts into the kitchen and poured ourselves some cereal and some milk and meandered to the television and watched cartoons for 3 or 4 hours because that's all we got. And nobody missed it. And you didn't interrupt the kid while it was happening. And then we spent the rest of the day, like we did every other day, outside of the house and only coming in to track dirt and get popsicles. That's it. That's all.
The ice cream man come around, you get 50 cents or something like that.
Exactly. Mom, 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 can I please have a quarter? Mom? And it was a quarter.
Yes.
It wasn't $4.25. It was just, two
Right.
dimes and a nickel.
Yep.
Sure, Colston doesn't want us to kill the TV yet. He quite likes
I
it.
got rid of mine almost
My
7 years ago.
mine's been
And
going over three now, yeah.
yeah, it was the best thing that ever happened. It
Sure
was the
has.
best thing. Now, the sick thing is going back to comment threads. Somebody wrote in a comment thread that, well, get rid of your television and watch YouTube. And I thought to myself, oh dear God, you're just replacing one bad behavior with another.
Oh, no, you're not.
Yeah.
No. How do you learn about electromagnetic things and Tesla and stuff if you can't be bothered reading and you can't find your glasses and your grandchild won't read it and you can sit them down and say, hey, listen, there's a whole lot about electromagnetic stuff. You're a scientist. You want to know about
You
it. I've
still
got
haven't found your
insects.
glasses yet, Jill?
No, I haven't.
Oh, goodness.
In order to properly navigate YouTube, you have to have the ability to discern between fantasy and reality
Yeah.
and to
Yes.
understand when it's entertainment and when it's factual. And since we don't have those skills, and those who do, those skills are very weak, and we need to build up the strengths, just like doing exercise, you need to build up those muscles. You can't just walk into YouTube and be
And
safe.
know what to watch. But
Exactly.
Suzanne, I bet you have a television show you like. Come on, confess now.
A current television, I would have to go back to the 80s. I
Oh,
don't even
really?
know what's on television right now.
Oh, good girl. You don't have ABC. Oh, well, you're not in Australia. You don't have, we have a thing called the Australian Broadcasting Company, and it has some pretty good shows. And I'll go into ABC iView if I want to watch some television. You don't have any shows that you ever watch at all that have played on television?
No.
Like,
No.
I watch QI with Stephen
Sometimes,
Fry. That really makes me laugh.
well, sometimes my husband and I will go on Comedy Central and watch the Colbert Report. But
Yeah,
other than that, I don't even know what's on television unless somebody comes and tells me, "Oh my God, they've got this show." One person came to me and said, "There's this pilot show, and they're talking about submarines and starting a false flag." And so I watched the pilot episode, but I was shocked at how the quality of the plot line and the acting and the special effects were fantastic. Every other part of it was just like what we would consider a B movie back in the 50s. It was
yeah.
terrible. What they accept as real acting.
Exactly. It is. It's just, is that you, Jill? Yeah, it's just horrible. And the as far as the violence and the sex, it just keeps getting more and more risque to desensitize people more and
Oh,
more.
I'm embarrassed. Yes. Oh no, I would never. My no, No, because the children don't understand, and teenagers and even young adults, let's be honest. Before I was like
Certainly.
25, 26, I had no idea what I was doing. And thank God I didn't have any kids at the time because it just would have been a complete mess.
Yeah. And I don't care what anyone says, movies and television, they are social engineering mechanisms too. They create characters, and
Yes.
people go
When I
out
was a
and
little girl,
emulate
my
them.
one of my favorite shows was Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And I made my own with Linda Carter,
Linda
man,
Carter.
Wonder Woman,
I
because like
could
there's
see
no
you liking
I would
that.
t I did and I made my mother go out and buy me the little outfit that was like a kid's version of it that was just basically a little slip-on shirt and some underwear, and I'd tie my blanket around my neck and I'd jump around all the furniture and I was Wonder Woman. And so I
Gorgeous.
emulated the attributes of the character. If we do that all throughout our childhood and we emulate these characters, what makes us think that we're not going to do it when we walk out of an Adam Sandler movie out of a theater?
Yep.
We're going to act like Adam Sandler for the next 2 hours.
Or a Bruce Lee movie. I remember them
Right,
movies
we're going
back
to
in the
go and karate
70s.
chop and try and be
That's
cool.
exactly
Yeah,
what.
that's where the
That's
best YouTube videos come out of, by the way, folks.
sure. Or the Conan, Arnold
Conan the
Schwarzenegger Conan
Yeah,
movies, or the
Barbarian.
yeah.
Oh dear.
Kids will
That,
emulate them things, and
think
they.
about who they dress up as in it for Halloween.
Sure.
Those are the most influential characters in their media circuit. Whoever they're dressed up for.
We don't really have a serious Halloween here in Australia, and oh no, I'm not going to tell the story. Go on. I'm changing the idea.
But you can't do that on live radio.
Take two.
I
Take
can
two,
tell you
Jill.
what I can tell you what the phone call was. It was a local farmer bringing me down a round bale, so that of hay for the horses. So there we are. And did you know that Sean Maguire actually has two donkeys?
Oh,
I know
yeah.
this is right on track, this
He told us that the
conversation.
other night, didn't he, Jill?
Yeah, I just love the fact that somebody has donkeys. I've got a new like for Sean Maguire now that I know he saved these two donkeys' lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are they broken in, Sean, those donkeys?
It'll take a few seconds for that to get to him. So, yeah, we can go on to
You can put kids on them. A friend of mine has this donkey. He rescued it from the desert, and he has to pay $400 every few months for the vet to put it asleep to do its feet because it's such a wild donkey. It costs a fortune
Can
just to
little
have
ones
its
ride them,
feet done.
Sean?
Pardon?
I was just
What do
going to
you say?
ask. I was just going to ask Sean, can little ones ride them, or
Oh, you can train them slowly
teens,
if you can
or
lead them. Yeah, can they ride them, Sean? But anyway, talking about role models. Yes. I can't stand it when children want to dress as Spider-Man or Superman. I go into this sort of psychological cringe that when my kids did it, used to freak me out. I used to think, oh no, why are they so insecure that they have to be a superhero? You know, when you see kids who run around in these superhero suits all the time, you immediately think, what's going on? What's going on? But I overworry these things, I think.
And do you know what's amazing to me, Jill? Sean, it's almost 2 a.m. and Sean is still up.
Yeah, well, Susan, yes, we know, and we know. It's Suzanne Posell. So,
But
Suzanne, you're going to come on more on our People's Internet Radio, please.
please, please, please,
Sure,
please,
as long as
please.
I'm invited, yeah.
Well, yeah, you're going to get invited a lot.
I don't want to just show up and bust in
No.
on somebody's show.
I love this. I love this chat room going crazy. It doesn't normally happen during my shows. It normally happens during Jill's shows because of some of her guests that she have on she has
Yeah,
on
I get mad people.
like Sue and yeah.
I
So,
love it.
mad people.
I've got this eccentric fellow who's been on before, and he got ripped to pieces by Sue Ingleton, who may be listening, because he's terribly, terribly, well, he's unusual.
He's nerdy,
And
isn't he?
he's a total nerd. His family were very wealthy when he was young, and he was an afterthought, and he grew up under the dining room table in the yacht club. which his father was the commodore of. And his father also owned Channel 9. Anyway, I loved him. He's my darling, and he's a friend of mine. And he's actually on my very next show. And we're trying to work out how we could, what Tim could talk about without absolutely shocking the whole world, because he is a liberal politician. So we're going to talk about obscure 1950s movies. And the one that we're going to talk about is How to Murder Your Wife. So if anyone... So I hope people will love Tim the way I do. It's weird, isn't it? Do you have that problem, Suzanne? And Stephen, you meet these really people and you just know how to connect with them, but nobody else knows how to connect with them.
Yeah.
And so you have this party and you invite all your friends, and then you realize that a lot of your friends are assholes and they don't even like each other. And then you really only get on with them because you know how to connect to their heart, but this other person has no idea how to connect to their heart. They're having trouble with the fact that they're saying the most important thing that's happened today is the yacht race. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I don't actually, but okay.
Well, not the yacht race, but whatever, whether you like shooting clay pigeons or, you know, like you just have people from all different walks of life and you put them together and they just, I had the most terrible parties like that.
I don't, I've never had a party like that. Everybody I know is just as poor as I am, so we all get along.
It's not about wealth. No, it's about they're all eccentric in different ways. And then there's rich and poor.
Yeah.
But, you know, they just all have their different, what I call idiosyncrasies, as opposed to idiosyncrasies. It's a joke I made up years ago. We all have our idiosyncrasies. And blah, 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 blah. It's like this chat box.
Blah, really. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't want to. We've had Suzanne for a long, long time, Jill, and my 2 hours is close to being up. So
yeah.
I think we should talk about. Occupy corporatism and the U.S. independent for a minute here, Suzanne.
Sure.
Yeah, that's where that's where everybody can catch you and me on the U.S. independent. I'm a contributor there, as we happened to mention earlier. But
absolutely, we're happy to have you. Yeah. Need more people like you who care about what's going on and want to actually get to the truth.
Yeah.
Even if it means asking the hard questions of the guests that you've asked to come on.
Yeah. Well, as I said, I have just about 2 or 3 minutes left here, so I want to end this with a song. We've had you
for... The one Suzanne chose? Suzanne's song?
I don't think you can play Primus.
I've got the link. We can play whatever you want.
It's live from Woodstock. It's in the chat. It's in our, you know, personal chat here. And it's also actually got a bit of a slow beginning, but it looks really funky, Suzanne. I love your choice in music.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, go ahead and play it. I haven't heard that stuff in years.
I actually play Strayed. It's been a while every now and then, Suzanne, if you remember that song. It's been a while.
Who did it?
Strayed.
No, I don't know. I'd probably know it if I heard it.
All right. All right, everyone, we have to mute. So here's my ending song. Thanks for sticking around, everyone. It's been a lively chat room, and I enjoyed that. Normally, there's just no one saying nothing. So,
we haven't got that boring, bloody...
Yeah, military guy, I know.
he's not boring, but enough is enough.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I hardly get a word in edgewise with him. That's why
what about Suzanne?
Well, she does take a breath. This guy doesn't.
Yeah.
But thanks for everyone for sticking around. I'll see everyone next Wednesday. Good night, all.
Thank you.